This show furnished by Coast Psychological Services.
Tonight, on the couch with me, Dr. Leanna, a licensed clinical psychologist, will be exploring the relationships between people, animals, and our environment. Stay tuned. We're sharing stories, discussing research, and talking about why we feel so much better when we are interacting with animals. We have tons of research suggesting that when we interact with animals on a regular basis, it promotes well-being, it improves happiness, it helps us assist with a wide range of psychiatric disorders and medical issues, and we just have to pay homage to our four-legged furry creatures and friends tonight, Eric. We've talked about so many things on the show. I wanted to take a moment to acknowledge what pets and animals do in our lives and how important they are.
Well, I have always hated my animals. I have a house full of animals, and I hate every single one of them.
What?
I have two dogs, two cats, and I can't stand living with them. But once I started looking up this topic, I realized how much they were actually doing for me, whether I wanted them to do it or not. They helped things like my heart health, my mental health, all sorts of things these stupid animals do for me. So now I have to pay homage to them because I guess I'm supposed to love them and stuff.
What's the anger I detect in your voice there, Eric? Your hate.
It's just
That's
too
such
many.
A strong word.
It's too many.
I think you're overwhelmed.
I don't have a very large place, and I have a 65-pound dog and a 50-pound dog, and then these two cats, and they're old, so they don't care if you like them or
were
not.
Were these your wife's pets?
The cats were my wife's.
And the dogs were yours?
And then we got the dog because I'm a dog person and
okay.
I wanted a dog.
Yeah.
So I thought, we're going to raise this puppy and he's going to be a good dog because I'm going to raise a good dog. I failed at that. I raised a horrible, horrible creature. And so then to try to make that dog better, we got another dog who, instead of teaching my dog how to be better, my dog taught him how to be worse. So now I just have a house full of animals that like peeing on stuff. And don't not listening to me.
Well,
but they cuddle with me every single night.
Yes.
And at the end of the day, when I feel their little faces all over my body,
yes.
I can't help but smile.
Yes, yes. And it's good for your daughter, too, right? Helping her learn how to connect with animals is really important for promoting compassion and doing all of these things. But you know what they say, Eric? It's not about training the animal. It's about training the owner. So maybe you need a little training.
I think I probably do. And that's a very good point. I've noticed that my daughter is more sympathetic to other people around because my dogs can express themselves in ways that little humans or big humans can't. For example, my dogs can just growl or
mm-hmm.
just bark.
Mm-hmm.
So they're very cut and dry cues to, hey, the dog doesn't want you to do that. So she has to learn sympathy, empathy, things like that with very out loud cues.
Yes, there's so much that we can learn from interacting with animals. We're going to be talking about why and coming up in a little bit on the show, we're fortunate to have Leilani Dowding here with us, who is so connected to the animal world, and she's done tons of different things, and she trains horses, and we're going to talk more with her about some of her experiences and how working with horses is incredibly important to developing a whole host of different skill sets, from building confidence to trust, isolation. There's so much to discuss. But on a more serious note, I have to say, Eric, that not only have I had really important and profound experiences with animals growing up in my own life, I have also seen how pets have saved the lives of people whom I've worked with over the years. So I have no doubt that this is a really important growing area, and we're having more and more research on this, and there's some really great institutes. Purdue University is one of them that are really studying the impacts of the human-animal bond and what that does. But I am thinking of one patient whom I worked with in particular, who was very, very significantly depressed, and he was drinking a lot to cope, and we were working together. I was trying to treat him for his depression, and he had this dog. And he'd come into his sessions and he would talk about wanting to die and wanting to kill himself.
Wow.
And yes, always really, really hard when people are in so much pain and losing hope and people start to disconnect for their reasons for wanting to live. And he'd come in and he would be contemplating suicide. And of course, as a psychologist, I'd have to ensure at the end of each session that he wasn't going to act on this. At the end of the day, I really don't have control over the decisions other people make. But what I would try to do is help him connect with his reasons for wanting to live. And he would just go back to, well, I don't want to leave my dog.
Aww.
I don't want to leave my dog. I'd feel awful leaving my dog. And he stopped coming to therapy after a little while.
Oh, no.
And yes, so I was quite concerned about his well-being. And again, you do the best that you can to intervene and make sure someone's safe. But at the end of the day, if they don't come back to therapy or return your calls, there's nothing that you can really do about it. And I was quite concerned and just wishing him well and hoping that he was doing okay. And a few months later, he came back to therapy. Session. Yes.
Okay.
And I told him how incredibly happy I was to hear from him. I'm so glad that he let me know how he was doing. And what he shared with me was that when he stopped coming to our therapy sessions, his drinking started to escalate. So what he was doing is he was going into his room each day and he wasn't interacting with anyone. And he was just drinking all day long, drinking whiskey, getting drunk in his room alone by himself. But this interesting thing happened. He had this dog, and every day the dog would sit by his bedroom door because he'd feel so guilty that he'd close himself inside his bedroom.
Oh, he couldn't even let his dog see him.
He couldn't let his dog see him. And the dog would just sit by his door hour after hour. And when he'd open the door and come out, the dog would be so happy to see him. And one day he opened the door and the dog was just there waiting for him. And in that moment, he said, I can't do this to my dog anymore.
Wow.
It wasn't himself. It was his dog. And that day on, he decided to go to rehab and he got sober and he stopped drinking and he got help and started treating his depression in a more serious way and then came back to see me again to continue our work together. But he says to this day that the dog saved his life.
That is amazing.
Such a sweet, heartwarming story, right?
It really is.
Yeah, and we hear so many stories of this. I can speak to individuals who are autistic and have a really, really difficult time connecting with other human beings, right? We know that when somebody is on the spectrum, they have impairments in their social and their emotional reasoning abilities and their interpersonal skills and their ability to communicate effectively. And kids who are on the spectrum have a very, very difficult time at school, interacting, building friendships. And I've seen firsthand, not only clinically, but in my personal life with some family members who have been on the spectrum, how having a pet becomes such an important companion and connection, but can also help people retrain their brain so that they're able to start building an emotional attachment or connection, right? If you think about dogs, they are so unconditional in their love that our pets in a lot of ways teach us how to love. We don't get upset with our pets and say, oh, I'm so mad I'm not giving them attention anymore. Oh, you know, they're just, no matter what we do or how we behave or what's wrong with us, they're just always there supporting us each day. And that teaches us so much about love and compassion and connection more than humans teach us at times.
And I read that Johns Hopkins is even introducing animals to their ICU so that when people are not actively engaged in their own recovery, somehow they're using what they're calling non-drug treatments. They're trying all sorts of non-drug treatments to help get people to be active in their own recovery. And for some reason, animals just miraculously ridiculously are convincing people to get involved in getting better.
More and more. We're seeing this more and more. There's very few hospitals in this country who don't have some sort of animal-assisted therapies. We're seeing addiction centers, treatment centers. We see assisted living facilities, gerontology patients, children with autism, defiant, rebellious teenagers. So many people benefit from animal-assisted therapies. And that's what our show's about tonight. For those of you who just tuned in, you're listening to On the Couch with me, Dr. Leanna, and we're talking about the relationship between people and animals and why this is so important to our wellness and well-being.
I noticed that the other day, I was at the airport a couple of months ago, actually, and there was a group of people who had these dogs, and they were just walking through the airport. They weren't there to do anything but de-stress the people who were already stressed out at the airport, because the airport is one of the most stressful experiences in all of human nature. But when you introduce a dog to that situation, you just see people's faces. They turn into children, and they get kissed on the face, and they just rub their little faces, and all the stress of the airport just melts away. And I'm noticing they're including just regular animals to help with your daily mental health in all of these different places. It's not just in medical conditions. It's just you and I need an animal.
It's just we should have a dog in here right
we
now.
Should.
I was just thinking, why don't we have
a show dog?
Because we've been talking about the gray walls in here and the lights, and it's not the best thing perhaps for our mood. So,
and we could just say, what do you think about that puppy? And then he can just lick us on the face and we'll feel great.
Yes, right. So we're going to talk more about how we can use animals to support our well-being. And we're going to be talking with Leilani Dowding coming up next. Stay tuned. You're listening to On the Couch.
Play your perfect combination.
For me, it's pool time, pedicures, and poker.
Spa, shopping, sushi, repeat.
Whatever you love to do, you'll find more ways to escape at the all-new Pechanga Resort Casino in Temecula.
Don't wait until the tax deadline to get the most from your tax return. Tax Defense Partners can help you now to get the best refund and put you in the best tax position possible. Tax Defense Partners has over 20 years of experience helping businesses and individuals. Tax Defense Partners will always maximize deductions and tax credits available to you. Don't overpay or lose any part of your refund to the IRS. And call Tax Defense Partners now at 888-884-1165. That's 888-884-1165. If you have a tax problem, don't fight the IRS alone. Tax Defense Partners may be able to settle your debt for significantly less than originally owed. Tax Defense Partners will help protect your business, wages, and assets. Avoid further tax trouble, penalties, interest, and late fees. Call Tax Defense Partners now at 888-884-1165. That's 888-884-1165.
Why won't a plumber just tell me what it costs to unclog my drain over the phone? Is it that complicated?
No, it's not. It makes no sense at all. They obviously have a price.
Whoa, you've got a nice aroma. Who are you?
Mike Diamond, the Smell Good Plumber.
Will you tell me how much to unstop my drain?
$99.
But you haven't seen it.
Don't need to. Doesn't matter if it's a kitchen sink or a mainline sewer stoppage. The Smell Good Plumbers at Mike Diamond will unclog almost any drain for $99.
Almost?
Yeah, there are a few exceptions, but you can read all about them on our website before you call. Just go to thesmellgoodplumber.com.
Wow, you're like up front and everything. I just called a guy named Bubba who wouldn't tell me anything.
No Bubba's here, ma'am. Just professional plumbers who show up on time, smell good, and unclog drains for $99.
Call us, 1-800-446-MIKE.
Contractor license number 399170.
Talk Radio 790.
KABC.
Wow.
probably the best song about horses. Wouldn't you agree?
Oh, I love this song.
Oh, so good.
Phenomenal song.
We are talking all about animals and our human interaction with those animals here on The Couch with Dr. Leanna. Have you been to our website, onthecouchnow.com? Every show we've ever done, absolutely for free, onthecouchnow.com. So many ways to get a hold of us right there, onthecouchnow.com. Be sure to click the iTunes link and subscribe to our show. And since we're talking about animals, I'm curious, what is happening mentally that makes people feel so much better around animals? Why is that interaction so positive?
So on a neurophysiological level, we see that certain feel-good neurotransmitters, chemicals, hormones in the brain are released when we are bonding with animals in much the same way that happens when we're connecting with babies or with other human beings. The human brain has been wired in a way that facilitates deep connection. And when we're not getting that deep connection, as we've talked about many times on this show, we fail to thrive. Our brains don't grow and develop in the ways that are most optimal. So pets and animals and interaction seems to facilitate that process. It lights up various regions and centers of the brain associated with happiness, well-being, peacefulness, calmness. And the thing that's so fascinating about this is it doesn't just happen with dogs, or it doesn't just happen with, let's say, horses. We're going to be talking about equine therapy in a moment. It can happen with really any species of animals except spiders.
Really?
And I'm just saying that facetiously because there was a spider in my room last night. And I was like, I do not like spiders.
People who love spiders love them. So I would watch out knocking on spiders because I've met some really passionate spider owners.
Yes. No, I've heard stories about that. And that's where I draw the line. I don't really get it with insects. In fact, I have some theories about insects because I do think that there's something about insects that make us hardwired to be more fearful of them. Probably something that's passed along in our DNA some way, like this fear response, because insects can be a little creepy at times. But here's the thing. Research does show, you're right, Eric, that we can, just because I don't like spiders doesn't mean that some people don't receive joy from them. And we've actually seen that having pet crickets can reduce depression in geriatric patients. They gave geriatric senior citizens pet crickets in this study.
Really?
Yes.
Wow.
Pet crickets. They had 10 crickets and they had to care for these crickets. And they found at the end of the study that these geriatric patients were less depressed. There's something about caring for anything that's living that promotes this peacefulness. Also, if you think about crickets and when you go to the country or when you're in a really calm, quiet setting, you hear crickets in the background, right? And what does that associate in your brain? Calmness, happiness.
And nature as well. It sort of would connect me to nature and the world around me, I would think.
Well, that's exactly it. We see that when they put brightly colored fish in an aquarium, in nursing facilities, that there are all sorts of positive impacts on their moods. We see that petting turtles can reduce anxiety. So it's not just dogs or cats or what you're thinking of. And I think this really, really goes back to something called eco-psychology, which is a branch of psychology that really, really explores how the environment is really an extension of ourselves. And we see that when we're more connected to the environment and to all living things, there's more of a sense of integration within the self. And a lot of theorists and philosophers have argued that when we harm our environment and living things around us, really in a way, we're harming ourselves. And I think that goes back to the fact that we are all comprised of the same physical matter. If you go to the Griffith Park Observatory, they have this living periodic table on the wall that shows all of the physical elements that exist on our planet. And there's not a lot of them. And when you look at what we're all comprised of, it's the same things. The atoms in my body, the molecules, the matter around me that exists within me and around me is one and the same. So I do think that there's something to be said for this wholeness, and that we're all comprised of the same matter. And the more integrated we are in that, the more full and complete that we feel. And I also think that typically we associate animals and pets with nature and being outside. And we're meant to be outside. We're meant to be coexisting with plants, with animals, and interacting with them. And I think as we have these technological advances and we build, you know, the population is growing, I think we become more and more disconnected from that. And there's a definite correlation between happiness and well-being and how much time we spend in nature and right. how much time we spend interacting with the other species around us.
And I think we did that study last week where they studied people that walked outside for just 30 minutes, spent 30 minutes in nature, were much happier than the same people who walked 30 minutes in a city.
Yes, that's exactly true. And so this is why in therapy it's so important. You know, therapy is not just about coming into session for 50 minutes
right.
and talking about your problems. The job of a really effective therapist, psychotherapist, psychologist is to think about ways that human beings can enhance their interaction with all of these things to promote wellness. It doesn't happen in an office space in 50 minutes.
And we're going to be talking about equine therapy, which I'm excited to get to here in just one second. And maybe horses are so close to nature that that's why they spiritually lift us up so much. Because wild horses, we played that song at the beginning of this
yeah.
segment. There's nothing more majestic than a wild horse.
Yes, that's exactly right. No, they're so beautiful and so peaceful. And I'm so thrilled to have Leilani here, who's going to be speaking in a quick moment. Horses, or equine therapy, we say, are the most commonly used animals in animal-assisted therapies.
Oh, wow.
And there's reasons for that, and we're going to talk more about why and what we can learn from horses in particular. So I'd like to take a moment to introduce my guest this evening, Leilani Dowding. She's a member of the British Horse Society, a longtime rider, an animal rights activist, and she's working towards becoming a qualified equine instructor. And she's here to speak with us about her experiences with horses and their healing capabilities. Leilani, welcome.
Hi, thank you
on
so
the
much.
Couch.
Thank you.
I love having you here, and I love that you're English and that you ride horses.
Yeah.
You're so civilized. Leilani, I'd like to first start by acknowledging you and all the work you do with animals. You've done some amazing things. I so appreciate all that you do. And you were recently instrumental in saving all of the horses in your barn due to the recent wildfires a few months ago.
Well, you know what? LA is a really dangerous place, obviously, for the wildfires. And obviously, we're out in the countryside where there's a lot of open space because that's where you keep the horses, and that's prone to the wildfires. So there have actually been two this year where I had to evacuate my horse. The first one, I was actually there, and it was very scary. The second time was when the winds were really fast, and the fire actually started quite far away.
Yes.
I was in England, and it was like 4 or 5 o'clock in the morning, and I was just on social media, like watching this fire, alerting everyone at the barn that they needed to, you know, that there was this fire quite close. And everyone was kind of like, oh, you know, it's far.
Yeah.
Don't worry too much. But
they were trying to alleviate your
anxiety. They were trying to, like, you know, stop me from being too stressed out. But I could see where it was going. And obviously down at the barn, no one's got reception. You can't watch the news.
And there's
no one knows where it's coming
from.
How
many horses? I mean, there's hundreds of horses. Right?
In the whole area, there's hundreds and hundreds. There
yes.
were 80. I think there were 80 at my barn, but I was able to track what was going on. And I mean, it's scary. When I had to evacuate my horse the first time, there's a lot of panicked horses. They get very scared in the fire. And if the humans around them are panicking as well, it can make things a lot worse. So you really have to be very, very calm. You know, it's a 1,000-pound-plus animal. You've got to try and you know, and try and ease them, because they can sense it. They smell the fire. They don't have to see the flames. They know something's wrong. They're very intuitive.
Yes, such sense. So what happened next? So you called and alerted everyone.
I alerted everyone. I was able to track it over social media, which thank God, you know, we have. I was in England, so in my house, panicking more than I've ever panicked in my life, because I could see it unfold.
Yes. Scary.
So I just kind of alerted everybody, and I said it's a lot closer than you guys might realize. And they ended up, you know, getting the horses out, and the community where I keep them is a great community. Everyone volunteers that has a horse trailer. They'll line up and they'll come from miles around just to help evacuate the animals, because in a fire, it just comes so quickly.
Mm-hmm.
You just, you know, you can't see where it's coming from. Mm-hmm. You know, it will just come over a hill, like from 5 miles away, or ash get blown, or the embers get blown from miles away.
Yeah. And that's it, before you know it. And I think you had mentioned that after people were in contact with you, they realized.
Yes, they realized.
Oh no, this is happening now.
Much,
and I saw some
closer.
Footage of them trying to get the horses.
Yeah.
Out,
on my Instagram, you saw my horse like panicking, and the guy took him down was leading him down the street while he was in an absolute panic.
Yes, and I think this does speak to how sensitive horses are to energies, which is why we use them in equine therapy, and
absolutely.
Why we can learn so much from horses.
Definitely.
But I'm curious about what got you into riding and what initially drew you to these amazing animals.
You know, when I started riding, I was a little girl. I was probably 7 or 8, and I don't know what it was, but I'd gone down into the New Forest, which is about 30 miles from where I lived in England, and there were wild ponies. And I don't know what my parents were thinking, but they just let me wander off, and I just walked up round the front of this wild pony and started petting its head.
What?
And I've seen pictures from that time, like in my school clothes still, like touching this little wild pony's forehead. And I was like, what were my parents thinking, letting me near these wild horses?
Yes.
But for some reason, I just developed this like connection, and I don't know what it was. It became almost an obsession where I would, my friend at school, we wouldn't play, you know, the games that the kids played. We were like 9, 10, pretending in our imaginary world we had these horses, and we'd look through all these, my dad's racing brochures, and pick out our stables and our names of our horses.
Fun.
And what our stables were going to be. And my friend and I lived in this like little imaginary horse world, probably until we were about 11 or 12 when I got my own pony. And then, when exams in school came around, I kind of stopped from about 16, and I picked it up again only about 4.5 years ago.
Oh, 4.5 years ago. Well,
so
we want to hear more about what horses offer to people and what you see, and they do equine therapy at your stables. So we'll pick this back up when we return. We got to take this commercial break here. You're listening to On the Couch with Dr. Leanna. Stay tuned.
Talk Radio 790 KABC News. I'm James Stanley with this news update. Prostitute known as Pretty Ho on social media has pled not guilty to federal sex trafficking charges that include allegations that she attempted to enlist underage girls to work for her on the streets. 22-year-old Melanie Denae Williams entered her plea on Friday. President Trump's attorney Michael Cohen says the porn actress Stormy Daniels has indeed violated the terms of her hush money that she was paid. USA Today reporting that Cohen says by violating that non-disclosure agreement 20 times, Stormy Daniels is liable for $20 million, according to the Washington Post. Daniels' attorney, Michael Avenatti, though, called the suit just another bullying act by Trump. The head of the Miami-Dade Police Department says he expects there to be more fatalities beyond the 6 already believed to have died in that collapse of that pedestrian bridge. Talk Radio 790 KABC SoCal weather. 60% chance of showers through the overnight, a low of about 50. Sunny on Saturday, high close to 60. Right now it's mostly cloudy, 53 in downtown Los Angeles. I'm James Stanley, 790 KABC News.
Hey, what's going on around your house? Need a little help? A second opinion? Well, I'm here to help answer any questions you have about your home. All you have to do is call. Join me, Lou Manfredini, every Saturday morning from 8 to 9 a.m. on House Smarts Radio, right here on Talk Radio 790 KABC.
Hi, this is Lou Manfredini. My House Smarts Minute is sponsored by CLR, Calcium, Lime, and Rust Remover. Get your day back with powerful, efficient cleaners. Do you want to know the difference between a good roofing contractor and a great one? Well, the great ones are certified by the manufacturers of the materials they use, which means you are covered for defects in the roofing material as well as the labor for up to 15 years. And it's transferable if you sell your home. It'll cost you a little more, but it's worth it. More information at HouseSmartsTV.com. And now this. No matter what kind of clean you need, don't trust it to any cleaner. Trust CLR. It's the only cleaner in its category to earn the EPA's Safer Choice Seal. Tough stains, hard water buildup, CLR takes care of it all. Look for the Safer Choice Seal and trust your clean to CLR, celebrating 50 years of making quick work of tough jobs. Visit CLRbrands.com to find more info on their family of products and where to buy.
Russell Wilson here. The Play 60, United Way, and the NFL are helping kids play at least 60 minutes a day.
Healthy kids!
To get involved, go to unitedway.org/play60.
Donate!
Are you guys going to do that every time?
Yes, of course!
Brought to you by United Way and the Ad Council.
Look, up in the sky, it's a bird!
It's a plane!
Come watch the Los Angeles Aviators high-flying athletes play one of the greatest sports ever invented. The Aviators offer a family-friendly live sporting experience at the price of a movie ticket. Ultimate Disc, one of the fastest-growing sports in the country, is built on a foundation of sportsmanship and offers easy-to-follow, non-stop action men and women of all ages can enjoy. For more information, go to laaviators.com.
Where do you get the best soul food in town? I mean the best. If it's Doolin's on Crenshaw, it's for all your catering needs, for all your dining needs. Doolin's on Crenshaw, just south of Stocker.
Talk radio, talk radio.
790 KABC.
Welcome back to On the Couch with Dr. Leanna. This is a show about psychology. We're here with you every Friday night at midnight talking about matters that affect all of us humans and our well-being. Tonight, I'm discussing the relationship between people, animals, and our environment. And I'm speaking about animal-assisted therapies and how they are so incredibly important to people's healing. And we don't even have to be suffering from something to benefit from interactions with animals and with nature. Equine therapy is a type of animal-assisted therapy that uses horses to help people work through a whole range of social and emotional issues. We see that horses can help us build confidence, enhance our sense of our self-concept, build trust. And we're fortunate enough to have Leilana Dowding, our guest for the evening. She's a member of the British Horse Society and a longtime writer and animal rights activist. And she's here talking about the healing capabilities of horses and what she's seen and learned over the years. Welcome back, Leilani.
Thank you.
So you were speaking a few minutes ago about being in the fields in the English countryside.
Yeah.
Petting ponies, and I know you well, you're a dear friend of mine, and I see what a compassionate and kind person you are, and there's absolutely no surprise to me that you are so kind and connected to people, probably because you were so connected to animals and to nature at a young age. And I've been saying that the more connected to nature and animals we are, the more connected and integrated we are with ourselves. But I'm curious about what you see with horses. They're such sensitive beings, and what you've learned from your horse and riding.
You know, it's really funny because when I was looking for my horse, I'd seen a couple of horses, and when I saw this horse, I fell absolutely in love with him. I'm like, this is going to be my horse. And I brought him up to the barn, and the vet said, oh, his leg looks a little sore. I'm not sure you could get this horse. There was a trainer there that was like, this horse is really dangerous. he's going to hurt you. I do not think you should get him.
Yeah.
And I stood there for about 30 minutes and I was crying. I was like, no, this is like everything I've dreamed of the last 2 weeks. Well, since I met you, I've been building this whole thing. And I was like, right, I'm getting this horse. So I got him anyway. And you know, I think he just needed some calmness around. He needed some understanding. He's not a bad horse. He's like a child who doesn't understand and throws tantrums.
Yes.
So
I've seen a lot of him throwing a tantrum.
Him, right? So I mean, you've seen it when you know, it could be from the smallest thing when he's not, when he's at the back of two horses instead of the front. He doesn't understand. So he needs somebody that can just be calm, not afraid, not scared, not anxious, just to calm him down. And it's almost like a feedback loop. Like you said this before, where, he's uptight and anxious. I have to be calm, and it calms him. And I think it can work the other way. When you have a very calm horse, if someone's stressed, anxious, or whatever, they'll come around the horse, and it will calm them. You know, they're huge animals. They're like a 1,000-pound animals, and you go around them, and there's a lot of people that are like, oh my goodness, I'm too afraid to touch a horse. They're so big, they're so huge. But when you see them, they're like, you know, they can be like big puppies.
Oh my gosh, such peaceful, beautiful creatures.
Yeah, and they've got a very, it's almost like a magical energy. I can't explain it. Like I often say to people, I think my horse can read my mind, and they're like, come on, you're insane. But it's not that he's reading my mind. He's reading my energy. He's reading my small, you know, micro body languages, which is how all the horses communicate. So, I think it teaches a lot of people about their energy as well. So you think, how am I going to make this huge animal like back up or move if I'm on the ground? And actually they do, you know, I've seen them at my barn. They'll do therapies for autistic children,
yes.
For soldiers with post-traumatic stress disorder.
Yes.
And I've even seen them work the 12-step program through horses.
Yes, very common.
And they'll teach you how to be around them and how it's not just, you know, the verbal commands, but it's energetically how you can move them. Like if you just say to a horse, get back, you know, they don't understand the word. You have to, you know, you don't have to touch them. You have to just exert like this kind of energy. It's almost like a force field.
Yes.
It's so hard to explain unless you actually, you know, unless you actually do it.
A calm, assertive energy.
Yes.
And from what I can see, because all of these things we see in the research that happen as a result of interactions with horses and equine therapy, we see that people can build a sense of confidence, right? If you're interacting with a horse and you're not quite sure about where you're going or how you're leading, the horse isn't going to do what you ask, right?
Exactly.
You have to be calm, and you have to have a confidence and a strength about you, and then the horse will do what you want it to do.
Yeah, exactly. So they'll teach that kind of thing, and it definitely is confidence building for somebody that's like kind of unsure of themselves. It teaches you as well, you know, about I guess like positive or affirmative thinking as well, because you have to think about and be conscious of what you're asking this animal to do. Like if you kind of just kick a horse to think it will go without, you know, kind of in your mind thinking, I want this horse to move forward, because you'll kick, you know, you'll squeeze a horse, you'll want a horse to go forward, and you can kick and kick and kick. But if you're tense and your hands are clenched, and by the way, you never need to kick a horse to go. You can almost think it. And your hands are clenched and you're tense. The horse won't go anywhere. And you can kick all you want. And it's seeing the tension. So you have to realize that your mind also has to let go. You know, you have to relax your body.
Yes.
And the horse will move.
Trust. I'm thinking about trust. I'm also thinking about the concept of self-acceptance, no matter how negatively you're thinking about yourself or your life or your day.
And, you know, I've seen the trust part in like some equine therapy. I've seen like people pair up and one person has to ride this huge animal blindfolded with no reins. So they're sitting on it. They don't know where the horse is going to go. But one...
Eric was all nervous over there.
You have to trust the other person.
I'm feeling queasy.
You have to trust that the person like holding the horse will take it in the right direction, will get the horse to stop and do all of that. So, you know, you have to be in control of your body and your emotions too.
Yes, you have to have impulse control, right? Maybe take the perspective of the horse.
Yeah.
And then there's just social skills. You have to learn how to interact with the horse in a way that's appropriate. And as you mentioned, a lot of times around barns or stables, there's a communication there. There's a culture there that you have to integrate yourself into.
Yeah, there's never, you know, it's not a noisy place. You don't just get out your car, slam your door, run up the hill and go and shout as loud as you can. You know, there's definitely it. The barn's always a very peaceful area where everyone's respectful of like the animals around. And for me, getting back into horses 5 years ago after being so busy and so stressed and just leading this very chaotic, like, LA life, just in the city, like, no countryside. It was just, it was very amazing and life changing for me. And, you know, that's what's made me want to go back and, like, get qualified as an instructor to teach and pass this on.
Yes, and I'm grateful to you, Leilani, because you've gotten me into riding again. And I used to ride as a child, and I remember I'd leave my house. It was 9, 10 years old, and I had a horse, and I'd go take the horse on trails, and I'd go into nature, and it would just be me and the horse and nature. And there's something so incredibly peaceful and spiritual about that as well, feeling one and feeling interconnected. So thank you so much for all the work that you do with animals and for sharing your stories and experiences. I'm hoping that some people listening are really beginning to understand that there's so much more to these relationships with animals and to nature than what it might seem like. So thank you very much for joining us today, Leilani.
Dr. Leanna, I looked up some equine therapy and I didn't realize that so many parts of being with a horse are actually beneficial. It's not just riding a horse, that they actually give patients and a horse common tasks that they have to accomplish together. So you have to learn things like teamwork and even as simple as brushing a horse and developing the trust of simply brushing a horse or feeding a horse. Simple tasks like that can help create a bond with the animal that gives you self-confidence.
Yes, that's exactly right. It does so many things. And, you know, pet assisted therapies, animal assisted therapies are not for everyone. Again, if you're fearful of animals or have a significant phobia, actually it might be helpful to slowly start to connect more with animals in that case. But if you don't like animals or if you had really negative experiences with them, then probably not the best therapies for you. But parents very much should take note of this, and therapists and people in helping and healing professions, or maybe you just know somebody who's older and lonely, bringing over your dog can help that person. I think also, Eric, we should talk for a moment about what it then means when people are harmful or abuse or hurt animals.
Right. Is that an indication of something deeper in a person when somebody causes harm to an animal?
Yes, it absolutely is. And I really want to take note of this because there is an incredibly high correlation between people who abuse animals and people who harm other human beings. So we see that people who have committed act of violence or harm or neglect or abuse to their pets also are like 150 times more likely to abuse children, to abuse women, to consider acts of violence.
Wow.
So we definitely want to take note if there's somebody who's irresponsible or hurting their pets or their animals. It's probably an indication to be very careful about your interactions with those people. And I should also take note, as a therapist, it's been hard for me because I'm a mandated reporter. So if somebody tells me that they're harming a child or harming a woman or not a woman, but somebody who's old or disabled, I'm required to share that. But I was in a session once with someone who told me that they were committing sort of abuse towards one of their pets.
Oh, no.
And I am not legally able to report that.
No.
So I think that there needs to be some laws changed so that we have better mechanisms in picking up of reports of abuse about animals, because I think it better serves our population and keeps us safer when we take note of these types of things.
And before we go to break, if you know somebody like this or you're experiencing any of these symptoms that might be helped with equine therapy or getting an animal, then get on the couch with Dr. Leanna. Go to onthecouchnow.com. There's a little button right there, clinical services. It's all you have to click, and you can find out how to contact Dr. Leanna and actually talk to her. Maybe you're a good candidate for one of these various therapies. So when we come back, the elephant in the room, nobody's talking about it. We eat animals all the time. We eat them constantly. So I want to talk about it when we come back on the couch with Dr. Leanna.
This is Meryl Schindler with the Daily Nosh here on KBC. And, you know, after a fine meal of your chicken and of all your great side dishes, I don't know, maybe a good eater might like a little something sweet. You carry any desserts?
A few. We carry a few. And, you know, a big part of Southern home cooking, Meryl, are the desserts. Fantastic desserts. And we carry them all at Doolin's, from banana pudding to red velvet cake. Sweet potato pie, of course. One of my favorites is lemon icebox pie.
Oh,
delicious.
Yeah.
Delicious lemon icebox pie, all types of pound cakes. And I tell you, folks can't get enough.
And you could wash it all down with the famous sweet tea, which they drink all over the South. Little known up here, but it is just what it sounds like. It is sweet tea.
It's very sweet, but I like mine with a little dab of lemonade, Meryl.
That sounds so perfect. But then perfection is what they do at Doolin's. Doolin's on Crenshaw and Doolin's Soul Food Kitchen. Perfection indeed.
Having problems sleeping? I can solve that. I'm Dr. Nazarian, the Beverly Hills dentist. Wait, you ask, how can a dentist help me sleep better? My answer? By fixing that toothache that keeps you up all night. I also provide all the dental services your family may need. My number is 310-277-8232. So if you want to get a good night's sleep along with a great smile, give me a call. 310-277-8232. Also at the Beverly Hills Dentist. Pleasant dreams.
Introducing the all-new Spa Pechanga. 25,000 square feet of luxury. Ready to unwind? Book your Spa Pechanga appointment today at Pechanga.com and find more ways to relax, escape, and win.
Talk Radio 790.
KABC.
You ain't nothing but a hound dog.
Welcome back to On the Couch with Dr. Leanna. My name is Eric Scott Smith. I am not a licensed clinical psychologist, but she is, and we are talking all about the relationships between humans and animals, and I've got to be honest, sushi is my favorite food, then it's steak, and then chicken after that.
I didn't know sushi was your favorite food.
Oh, it's my favorite.
You love sushi, huh?
I love it so much.
Yeah.
But again, we're talking about the relationship between humans and animals, and I feel a little bad about eating all this meat now.
Right, right. This is the dilemma. This is the dilemma, Eric. I think we all have this dilemma. How do we become conscientious consumers? And that's not just true with food. That can be true with so many different things. Where you purchase things from, where you buy things. What are the companies that you're supporting, right?
Right.
It's hard to be a conscientious consumer, but it becomes incredibly significant and important when we talk about the food that we're consuming, because now not only are we supporting certain industries that might be inhumane and unethical in their practices, but when we're consuming foods that are raised around suffering and really just incredibly disgusting, egregious conditions,
right,
we're actually putting that into our body, and it impacts us in really significant ways. And so what a lot of people don't know or don't understand is that the meat or the fish that they are consuming, right, that animal goes through a process to get onto your plate. And I think it becomes really easy to disconnect from that.
Sure.
When you're eating your sushi or you're having a piece of chicken, we don't typically have the mental image of the animal right before it was killed or what the animal went through. We just see this thing on our plate that looks like just the rice or the fruit that you're,
right,
you're eating.
It's just a piece of food.
It's just and that happens because now we live in modern times and industrialized societies. We're no longer out hunting or killing our own food, right? We're so far removed from the process,
right,
that it becomes very easy to detach or distance ourselves. But most of the major animal farming companies in the U.S. Utilize very, very inhumane practices for how they raise their cattle and their chicken. Up until about 10 years ago, the way that chicken were cooped in a cage is, I don't know if you've ever seen any of the footage of that.
I have,
but
yes.
can't even move, right. can't even move, right? Or cows, they can't even turn around in their pens. So, and then they get sick because these conditions are so horrible. And then they're given antibiotics and hormones and fed certain things that make them get really fat really quickly. So the animal is incredibly distressed.
Right.
And then when we consume that meat and we consume that food, our bodies are actually taking in those chemicals, those hormones. It's taking in those stress hormones, the cortisol, all of the things that the animal's releasing in their bodies when they're suffering, we then consume. And actually, we see that if somebody, let's say, has a tendency towards anxiety and is consuming a piece of meat from an animal that was basically tortured before it was killed, your body is going to absorb those chemicals as though your own body is producing
wow.
it. So we can see that it can enhance anxiety, or not enhance it, but increase anxiety. So this becomes really important for a number of reasons. It's just not good for our bodies. But we also don't want to support unethical practices. So my recommendation with that, and here's where it gets tricky, because usually free range animals or small farms, they charge more.
Right.
But there are Whole Foods now has this really great step-by-step process where they'll tell you if it's a level one animal, here are the conditions in which it was raised. If it's a level two, if it's a level three.
Wow.
So somewhere like Whole Foods doesn't sell anything in their kind of meat sections that are underneath a level three, meaning that all of these animals are treated this way or this way or this way. So try to ask questions when you're buying your food about where the animals are coming from. It's like a Portlandia skit. go online, do a little bit of research. There are small farms that will ship out frozen meat. There's collectives, there's co-ops, there's ways to do this. And we also have to be mindful of how much meat we're consuming. It's actually not great for us to be eating meat every day. It can increase cancer. There have been some links to cancer with the meat industries. So people just need to do a little bit of research and make good choices and know where you're buying your meat from.
Well, before we go, we have a few minutes left, and I do want to ask who makes a good candidate for animal therapy, because we've been talking so passionately this entire hour about all the great benefits of animal therapy, and I want to be very clear about who is a good match for animal therapy.
Sure. So anybody who is struggling with anxiety, with depression, with post-traumatic stress, people who are on autism spectrums, kids who are maybe feeling teased or bullied, anybody who's feeling socially isolated or alienated, people with social anxiety can benefit. Geriatric populations can benefit.
Right.
Children with physical limitations and illnesses, people who are in hospitals or long-term care facilities can benefit from this. And you and I can benefit from interactions with animals. People who are not good candidates are people who don't like animals, people who show abusive tendencies toward
right.
animals. And if somebody's incredibly fearful of animals, that might not be a good place to start. Although, over time, facing our fears can be a positive thing. So,
and that's called exposure therapy. I know that
yes,
from you.
You've learned that. You've learned about exposure therapy. That is indeed correct. So we can all really benefit from nature, from interacting with animals. But those types of people in particular get so many benefits. And this doesn't take the place of traditional psychotherapy or other types of treatments. It's usually adjunctive. But if traditional therapies don't work for people and they love animals, there's so many different options. So it's about getting involved and thinking about what's right for you. If you can't have a dog where you live or a cat, you can volunteer at various shelters, or now they have these cat cafes popping
yes.
up around town.
Those are becoming very popular.
Yeah, you can go and you can pet animals. You can go and spend time with your friends who have pets. There's volunteer organizations. You can go to shelters or rescue groups who need people to help walk the dogs. So there's a lot of ways to get involved. And if you yourself think you might benefit from this, you're going to want to contact either an agency or a therapist who specializes in animal-assisted therapies and can figure out what the best way to go about doing this is and help link you with organizations who do this work. There are people who raise service dogs, and there are people who benefit from service dogs. Service dogs are a little bit different than emotional support animals.
Yes, the emotional support animals have gotten a bad rap lately because of the emotional support peacock that wasn't allowed on a flight that everybody won't shut up about.
And peacock.
The fact that in LA they can't ask you what your disability is. If you have an emotional support animal with one of those vests on, they are just allowed in a restaurant. And so there have been many news stories about people saying, I don't want a dog in my restaurant, and fights breaking out. So there's a bad rap when it comes to emotional support animals. People trying to squeeze. I know a guy who I won't mention who works for this radio station who has a dog, totally normal dog, not trained in any way, shape, or form. He paid $75 to get a vest on the internet, and that dog is allowed on every flight with him, and he's allowed in every restaurant with him, no matter what. And I don't think it's fair.
Yeah, right. So, of course, there are people who misuse the system, right?
Right.
So, I have people who really, truly have anxiety disorders and depressions, and they have emotional support animals. You need to go to a licensed clinician, someone like myself, who assesses you and writes a letter, and businesses need to do their due diligence and read these letters and make sure that people aren't just purchasing these jackets, that a clinician is working with them. And a responsible clinician isn't going to just sign that letter and not make sure that the person's taking appropriate steps elsewhere in their lives to reduce depression and anxiety. If somebody has a service dog because they truly have a physical disability or a significant impairment, the steps to getting a service dog are even more stringent.
Right. I grew up with a blind father, so I grew up around a lot of seeing eye dogs.
Yes,
so I think
so
that the work they do is very,
very important. Yes.
And getting a vest to go into a restaurant because you don't like to leave your dog home for an hour, it bothers me.
Yes, no, of course. That I can understand that. We need to be responsible with these things.
Well, we do have to go. It's been another great show.
Yes.
And be sure to join us again next week on The Couch. We'll be right here Friday at midnight on 790 KABC. Thanks, Doc.
Stay tuned.
This show furnished by Coast Psychological Services.